Hello and welcome. I'm Todd Butterfield with ID the Future. Today we're privileged to speak with Dr. Jonathan Wells, who responded recently to a science article in the Washington Post about Darwin's finches. Jonathan Wells has received two PhDs, one in molecular and cell biology from the University of California at Berkeley, and one in religious studies from Yale University. A senior fellow at Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, he has previously worked as a postdoctoral research biologist at the University of California at Berkeley and the supervisor of a medical laboratory in Fairfield, California. And he has taught biology at California State University in Hayward. Dr. Wells has published articles in Development, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences USA, Biosystems, The Scientist, The American Biology Teacher. He's the author of Charles Hodge's Critique of Darwinism, Icons of Evolution, Why Much of What We Teach About Evolution is Wrong, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, and he's also co-author with William Dembski of The Design of Life. His latest book, The Myth of Junk DNA, dismantles a new favorite Darwinian icon by showing that much of our non-protein coding DNA performs essential biological functions. Dr. Wells is currently doing research and writing on the developmental information in embryos that is outside of and inherited independently of their DNA. Now that sounds fascinating, but that's not why we're here today. On the evolutionnews.org website, Dr. Wells, you wrote a response to a recent science article in the Washington Post, and listeners can go to evolutionnews.org and search for the article. First of all, I just want to say welcome and hello.
Hello, I'm happy to be here.
As an introduction, would you please do me a favor and just in general, help us understand what people are referring to when they talk about Darwin's Galapagos finches?
Sure. Well, Darwin's finches are birds that live on the Galapagos Islands, about 600 miles off the coast of Ecuador. Charles Darwin visited the islands in 1835. At the time, the birds did not make much of an impression on him, but 100 years later, someone decided that they were a good example of the origin of species and provided evidence for Darwin's theory. So a century after Darwin saw them, they were named Darwin's finches. And they've become an icon of evolution because, as I said, supposedly they show us the mechanism by which new species originate.
Well, that seems a bit of a reach, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Why are the finches appearing in a science article in the Washington Post? What is making it newsworthy again?
Well, scientists who study the finches have observed a change in the size of finch beaks. This has been going on a while. The same scientists, or some of the same scientists, studied birds on the Galapagos in the 1970s. And the scientists were fortunate enough, the birds were unfortunate, that a severe drought hit the islands and killed about 85% of the birds they were studying. The remaining birds had slightly larger beaks than the population before because the beaks enabled them to crack the large seeds that survived the drought. So at the time, this was hyped into evidence that these birds were becoming a new species. The problem is when the rains returned, the average beak size went back to normal. So there really was no net evolution.
But they point out that it was a quick change, and that is significant to some?
Well, it's significant in the sense that, first of all, no birds actually changed. The birds with smaller beaks just died. So if you took an average of the survivors, the beak size was greater. But the beaks themselves didn't change. But it could be considered a case of microevolution. That is a minor change within an existing species. But then it was hyped, as I said, into evidence for the origin of species, which is quite different.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. You refer to that toward the end of your article, which I encourage everyone to read because you make some good conclusions. But, and I'm just going to reveal my own bias here. It seems frequent that those who are pro-evolution to the point where they say that that's where everything began, from nothing and chance, and then we evolved from nothing and chance to what we are today, they'll look at a small change like you're referring to in this article within a species and say, here you go. This is conclusive evidence that this is where we all came from and how it all happened. Why do people so readily go there? I just don't understand.
Well, I've wrestled with that for many years myself, and I conclude that they have an underlying philosophical bias. It's a bias, actually, in most cases, in favor of materialism. So they insist on having a materialistic explanation for everything. Darwinian evolution is it in biology. And so the slightest bit of evidence that even remotely seems to help the theory is quickly elevated to the status of a near proof.
Almost to the point of a religious point of view, as it were.
I would say it occupies the same status, yes.
Is there anything that you want to make sure that the reader of the article or just the listener at this moment would want to take away from what you have written or where you would like them to go next?
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind the distinction. There is a distinction, and it wasn't made by creationists. It was made by evolutionists themselves, between microevolution and macroevolution. Microevolution certainly happens. We see it in our own families. Minor changes from generation to generation. But macroevolution, which is the origin of new species, new organs, and new body plans, has actually never been observed. The evidence for it is all indirect and, as I said earlier, usually hyped. That distinction is important.
It is, and it needs to be repeated, which I'm glad you did in your article. It's also interesting to me that we have articles like this written probably more by a reporter than a scientist doing an article in the science section of a newspaper, and people will automatically receive it as pure science without questioning it. At least it appears that way.
Yes, this was written by a journalist. In fact, I'll get to the article itself in just a minute. But what dismays me is that the scientists rarely, if ever, correct the hype. They let it go. It benefits them, I think, professionally, possibly financially. So they don't speak out and say, wait a minute, that's not what my study showed. They just let it ride.
So you think they're doing it for publicity purposes?
Well, they certainly want to promote evolution, and things like this promote evolution. So I think they see it as part of the overall strategy.
It's kind of sad because it doesn't feel like science is paramount. It reminds me of the National Geographic television shows from the 70s when they'd find part of a nose or a jawbone and say, this is what the entire animal looked like based on one inch chunk of bone.
Yes, lots of imagination goes into that.
Did you want to refer to the article at all?
Yes, well, the occasion for this most recent article was another study done on the Galapagos finches. In this case, a population of what are called large ground finches moved to an island previously occupied only by medium ground finches. The large ground finches have larger beaks, and so this time a drought hit the island, leading mainly larger seeds, but the medium ground finches couldn't compete with the large ground finches for the large seeds. The medium ground finches were forced to eat very small seeds. Well, for some reason, that resulted in the average size of beaks in the medium ground finch population to decline. So this time, instead of going up, the average went down. And that was the occasion for this most recent article.
And it has something to do with an HMGA2 gene. It has to do with survival rate of birds?
Well, the scientists identified a piece of DNA that they say is correlated with beak size. But of course, the change in average size of the beaks can be understood apart from this gene. So the article made it sound like the gene was responsible for the change, but it was not at all.
I see. So no real correlation, but by talking about it in the larger article, people are expected to put one with the other.
Yeah, and the article makes it sound as though we now understand how the finches evolved. Well, we do know a little more, but certainly nothing approaching that larger question.
Exactly. They say, as you quote, now we have a pretty thorough blueprint of how these famous finches evolve. No, we don't.
Not at all.
But they want us to.
Right.
And I love how you quote Winston Churchill at the end of your article. He might say, "Never in the field of science was so much based by so many on so little." And I hope with your work, sir, that we will find that to be changing, because you're doing a lot of exciting things even now. And I just want to thank you for your article, the work you've done, and the work you're doing toward moving forward true scientific thought and research. Dr. Wells, thank you for joining us today. For ID the Future, I'm Todd Butterfield.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2016. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org or idthefuture.com.